Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Out there in Facebook land, friends, family, strangers, people just tuning in, people that are tuning in now and clicking off, I want to say hi to all of you. My name is David. I'm going to be hosting the show today, and I have a special guest. This guy is loved by all here. His name is Grant Herless. Welcome, Grant.
What's up, Dave?
Not too much, brother. Thank you for coming to the show, man. We appreciate you taking the time out of your day and spending some time with us. And we're going to be learning something about you and your trip to sobriety and your travels through recovery, man.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So, okay. Now, one thing. Now, Grant and I do know each other. We have like a little kind of like work relationship going on right now. So I'm getting to know him a little bit. But one thing we were just talking about earlier is that, you know, I just find it interesting that you learn about people, you know, in little bites and little bits, you know. So there's a lot of things that I don't know about Grant. And, you know, I feel that it's fortunate for me and you guys that we'll be able to, you know, get a longer version of his history and background. So my man Grant, why don't you start off by giving us a little bit of your backstory, where you're from. I know you're from Chi-Town, right?
I'm from Northern Illinois. I rep Chi-Town.
Okay. No doubt.
Better than where I'm from.
My bad.
Yeah. So, I'm from Illinois. It's a little cold up there right now. Right. But my sobriety date is September 11th, 2018.
Congratulations, yeah. Bro. That's awesome. So you're born, you're raised in Chicago for how long?
I lived in up there until I was probably 23 years old.
Oh, okay. So basically the whole, until adulthood, basically.
Yeah.
The beginning of adulthood,
yep.
Right? Now, so what's life like in Chicago? What kind of stuff were you into growing up?
It's cold.
Right.
Yeah, it's
I know,
cold.
Man. It is cold there. I mean, it's a beautiful looking city. I've never been personally, but I just love, you know, I know, it was at Lake Michigan.
Yep.
It's right there. I heard that's beautiful there, but I hear it's windy and I hear like the winters are brutal there. Right?
Yeah.
So was it a big change for you moving down to this almost tropical?
Yeah, it's awesome.
Forecast?
Yeah.
No doubt.
Great.
No doubt. So now, what kind of stuff were you into growing up?
As long as I can remember, I think from the first time I could, like starting around 15, I started working in restaurants.
Okay.
So that's been a huge part of my life. I know a lot like yours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what Grant and I are doing now, actually. We're kind of in the restaurant biz together or working together, doing some new stuff that him and his co-workers have introduced to where I'm working at. So anyways, let's talk about your lifestyle. Let's talk about where, I guess, did you start out as a partier? Was it like a social thing, drinking? Or was it, alcohol's your choice, right?
Yeah.
That's it, right?
Well, let's. I think the right place to start is like the first time I drank.
Let's do that.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
Pretty much my whole life, I've kind of felt like I was on the outside of everything.
Right.
And it was probably seventh grade. It was the summer of seventh grade going into eighth grade that I got drunk for the first time.
Okay.
First time I drank, stole some vodka from my dad's liquor cabinet.
Yeah.
And I was just like, this is it.
So you liked it right from the...
Yeah, it was awesome.
Right from the from the rip. That was
I drank
your thing.
To the point where I threw up that first time.
The first time?
First time.
Wow. So yeah. So you knew you liked it, and did you do it often at that time in your life?
I mean...
Was it an automatic, like, I want to do it again?
I can't wait
to do
it. I mean,
even,
often,
even after you were sick and everything?
Often for an eighth grader.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
Right, so... All right, so then we start moving on in your life, and you said you were in the restaurant business, right?
Yeah.
Now, what was that like? Front of the house, back of the house? Were you waitering, bussing, cooking?
Mainly bussing. That probably started right when I started high school.
Right. I think it's good to. I think it's good to point out that that the restaurant business, you know, is there's an atmosphere there, you know, and I'm not talking about all restaurants, but I've been in the restaurant business my whole life. I mean, I grew up, my family, the generation before me were basically all raised in restaurants too. Mm-hmm. So I was like born into it almost, you know. And I know they're partying and drinking and, you know, that lifestyle is across the board. It seems like every restaurant that I've been to, did you experience the same thing? Was everybody partying? Because I guess a lot of it is like a younger crowd, right? It's like a first-time job for a lot of people. You turn 17, 18, you start busing, hosting, get your first dishwasher job, and all that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I discovered, and I still think of this with restaurants, is like some of the most amazing people in the world work in restaurants.
Yeah, it's so cool. Right?
Yeah, it attracts. You got to be hardworking, have a ton of energy. You've got to be creative.
Right.
You've got to be able to talk.
Fast pace. You have to be able to deal with the pace, you know, and take that kind of pressure and like make something out of it.
Yep.
You know, so. But do you see that lifestyle? I mean, those people. Do you see a lot of partying there more than other, you know, because I've did different jobs too, and it just didn't seem like drinking and partying, and it's like smoking weed, and definitely those two things were, I was almost introduced to that lifestyle because of my work environment.
Yeah.
You know? So is that the same experience that you've had?
Yeah, I think there's a lot more tolerance in the restaurant industry for that kind of behavior than any other industry. Right. I'm not going to go as far to say that it makes you that way.
Right.
But I do think if you're like me, you can survive in that area a lot longer than you could in a typical job.
Right. Okay. So, so it did have some, so what kind of influence did the restaurant business have with your addiction?
I mean, that's where I learned to be social. Like I was saying, I felt like I lived outside of society for most of my life and had a really difficult time, feeling connected.
Mm-hmm.
And you put a couple drinks in me, suddenly I feel like I can socialize in a bar or restaurant.
Right.
That's available right there for you. So right. I'd start my shift with a drink.
So it's a big social. It's almost like you're working and the work is hard and, you know, the stress is real. But there is a cool social atmosphere where you get to know people and you're working. You know, another thing in the restaurant business is that you're really working alongside people. I mean, your relationship is very verbal. It's very interactive. You know, communication is key in that business because, you know, you just can't be silent and expect things to work out right amongst from the back of the house to the front of the house to the customer. So there's a lot of hospitality. People are, you know, trying their best to be nice and they're trying to be fun and you want to create that kind of atmosphere in there. So it is a good place to get to know people and socialize, right?
Yeah.
Would you agree?
And, you know, you think about it too, the reason people go to bars and restaurants is to loosen up and to socialize.
Absolutely. Like a lot of people leaving their workday,
yep,
hitting the bar, wanting to hear some good news or wanting to just interested in each other's company, things like that.
So I'm starting my workday doing what they're doing to end their workday.
Absolutely. So,
yeah.
But the one thing that I found interesting with you was you start off in the restaurant business, you start bartending, but then the focus starts getting to a heightened level. You start going to a heightened level as far as bartending is concerned, right? You started becoming really successful. Is that?
Yeah, I worked for a couple of guys, a couple of people. There's women involved too that really did a great job of promoting themselves into what I'll say turning like bartending into a broader career than just being behind the stick.
Without a doubt. So you got to see it from see the business from a lot of different angles. So you basically had two mentors that were showing you the biz.
Yeah.
That from an angle you wouldn't get as just a serving drinks, right?
Exactly.
Cool.
So I tried to emulate that as much as I could never do it as well as they could.
Right.
But you know, I took every chance to get on TV, get in magazines.
Let's stop with that. So you did your job so well that you were on TV and in magazines.
Yeah, I mean, nothing huge, but yeah, I got
no, I know you're a humble guy. You know what I mean? That's why you're so loved by everybody, right? But why don't you go into that a little bit? What takes place to where you start going into that level? Because there's tons of bars.
Yeah.
There's tons of bartenders. Not so many in the magazines and not so many on TV, rather, you know?
Yeah, well, I around this time, I moved from Chicago to Madison, Wisconsin.
Okay.
And this is right around the time where, I guess you'd call it the craft cocktail movement, was really starting to catch on nationally.
Okay. Could you explain what the craft cocktail movement is a little bit so people, because I don't really know what that means.
So it's taken away a little bit more from just doing like a whiskey and Coke. Okay. And using some fresh house-made ingredients, having knowledge of your back bar, of all the ingredients. So I'd been working at one of the places in the country that had kind of started this trend and kicked it off.
Is this in Wisconsin?
This was in Chicago.
In Chicago, okay.
Yeah.
So then you moved to Wisconsin because of the trend?
Well, I was in a relationship with someone who was moving up there.
Oh, okay, I got you.
And I knew some Chicago chefs who had opened a restaurant up there.
Oh, okay.
So they wanted this trend that they had seen growing in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. They wanted to take it to Wisconsin.
So it was just starting in Wisconsin at that point, but I was one of the
originators.
We weren't the first, but right. we were up there as one of the first.
One of the pioneers,
yeah.
You would have to say.
Yep.
So, and it, did it blow up there?
Yeah. I mean, Madison, Wisconsin, it's every bar now. So
really?
Yeah, it was just basically me and another bar at that point when I got there.
Right,
that we're juicing lemons every day.
So I guess what happens is so you're working in the restaurant business, you get in the restaurant business, now you're becoming successful, right? Mm-hmm. Now you're moving up in the ranks and you got your own thing going on and you're learning from these great people all about the bar industry, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, what is your life like during this time, during this learning process? How are you living?
It was a mess. I mean, yeah. I was working 60, 70 hours a week.
Right.
In Chicago, we had a 4 a.m. license.
Okay, so you're staying up real late.
Yeah, I wouldn't get home till 9, 10 in the morning.
Wow.
I mean, drinking heavy because you're behind the bar.
Right.
Why not?
Right.
It's pretty much all I did.
It's all a promoted thing there.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's drinking and having fun.
Exactly.
But that being said, you are... would you say, since you just said your life is a mess,
mm-hmm.
is it starting, is there, even though you're rising professionally,
mm-hmm.
is there a downward spiral personally?
Yeah.
And do you feel it? Are you like, is there any concern from you, like the way you're living?
I didn't have concern yet. I thought I got it.
I
was like, this is it. Like, I'm doing it.
Right. So now, what's your age at this time?
The time I moved to Madison, I'm probably 23 years old.
23 years old, yeah. So very young.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Running a bar, running a restaurant.
So I guess at 23, man, everything's happening pretty fast too, right?
Yeah.
So you really don't have time to like reflect. There's no sort of reflection on how anything going out of control or like giving yourself any kind of criticism as far as your lifestyle is concerned, because you're probably making pretty decent money.
Yeah.
Definitely decent money for somebody that's 23 years old. Right?
Yeah.
So are you feeling good? Like, are you feeling like, what is your, like, are you feeling confident? Are you feeling like, you know, this is I'm the man? Because
when I got to Madison,
TV, yeah.
When I got to Madison, I definitely felt like I was the man.
Right. So how long did that last?
Probably another 2 or 3 years. I opened another 3 restaurants.
Wow. So now, is this like a franchise growing?
No, I did a consulting business, and I opened 4 restaurants. I consulted on 3.
Okay.
Got paid really well off of that,
mm-hmm.
And then worked for another restaurant and opened that.
Wow. So you're teaching people yourself now.
Yeah.
How to open up their bars, how to run their business, and this is the formula if you want to be successful.
Yep.
That's wild, man. And that's a very young age to be doing that.
Yeah. Because
I'm just trying to think, like, I'm a little bit older. So the thinking on my 23s, like in my early 20s, I was not in the same situation. You know, that's why I thought, you know, that's why I think your story is very interesting. So it goes on for 2 or 3 years now,
mm-hmm.
drinking every night.
Yeah, for the most part.
Is it a blackout situation?
Not at that point.
Not at that point.
No.
So you're in a relationship, right?
I am in a relationship. It was someone I went to high school with, yeah.
So your high school sweetheart, basically.
Yeah.
Right? That type of deal.
Yep.
That kind of love.
That kind of love. You got it. That kind of codependency.
Yeah. No doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt. So when does things start to take a turn for the worst?
I think it's towards the last restaurant I decided that I wanted to blame the restaurant for the lack of sustainability in my life. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, I need to get out of restaurants. Mm-hmm. So the logical next step would be, let's go work for a liquor company. Mm-hmm. You know, I know.
Oh, so you're saying like there's no the you what you didn't find the stability doing the job, even though you're consulting and everything. There's still like a shaky. You're still standing on shaky ground.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't keep money in my bank account. I couldn't. My life was just disorganized. I couldn't manage anything.
That's what I was getting to say. I was going to ask you, now that you look back on it, though, is it because of the sustainability of the actual business, or is it more of your lifestyle?
It's my lifestyle.
Your
absolutely.
Lifestyle was actually.
Yeah, you can make a great living in restaurants.
Right. So
great career.
But that was your excuse at the time. Like, yep. Oh, maybe I got to go do something different now.
Yeah.
And then you go into...
So I go work for a liquor distributor then. Okay. Because that I know every restaurant and bar in town, so it seems like logical.
And this is still in Wisconsin,
This is still in Madison, yeah.
Okay, no doubt. No doubt. Now, how did that work out for you?
Not so hot.
Not so hot?
No.
So I guess you were like you're working as like a sales rep?
Yeah, so at that point I was a rep selling to individual accounts.
Right. But you're probably killing, I imagine, since you know the area too well. Are you killing as far as like doing your job?
I would do patches of killing it.
Okay.
So like
good times, bad times.
Yeah, so there'd be like a fire that needs to be put out and our mm-hmm. distributor needs something done. I'd go get that done.
Right.
But as far as keeping up with day to day, it was could
hard.
Not do it.
Could not do it.
Yeah.
So what's your feelings during that time? Like, are you looking at it from a point of view like, wait a minute, I'm getting a little out of control with this?
No, I was looking at it from this company sucks. I can't looking work at, for these guys.
These people.
Yeah.
So there's constant like excuses.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm picking out people inside the company. Right, like right, I'm right. unsuccessful because of this guy.
Yeah.
And because of this circumstance.
All right.
Yeah.
I think it's great to be able to. Because that's such growth to me, to be able to look at portions of your life
mm-hmm.
and see where things went bad and then take that like important accountability, even if it's in reflection. Because
yeah.
like moving forward, when you realize, man, that, you know, this is why, this is truly why things were whack.
Yeah.
Is because of me, man. I have to got to like take responsibility for that. And if I was doing things differently, everything probably would have been peachy.
Yeah. And I strangely find a lot of comfort in that.
Absolutely, man, because I do that, right?
Yeah.
You know, I look back on, like, my relationships, the things that I could have changed, and that, businesses that I could have did a lot better at, and I was always blaming everybody else, too, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the reason I take comfort in it personally is because it's really mature and humbling to admit things. Like admit the bad side of yourself,
mm-hmm.
to put it out there, at least to realize it. And like, and the comfort I get from knowing that is that that's when those excuses and all those bad times turn into, even though it already happened in the past, it turns into a great learning lesson.
Mm-hmm.
Now you can look back on there and say at those times and be like, man, I don't want to do that no more. I'm not going to be that kind of guy. I'm going to grow from that situation. Now I'm seeing it through clear eyes. Now moving forward, I'm going to be that much more prepared to handle things differently. And that's automatically, I think, going to be able to set you up for a success in life in general. You know? Do you agree with that?
Absolutely.
So yeah, that's a comforting maturity that, you know, some people are able to get in life, but some people don't. Some people constantly blame. Some people, you know, that are older than both of us mm-hmm. are still blaming their life on situations, which I'm saying some people have, a lot of people have tough situations. There's probably were reasons why you said, you know, this dude wasn't any good. Maybe he wasn't that great.
Yeah.
But instead of like putting all of it on him, you're able to do it, take a little bit for yourself, do some good reflecting. But there's a lot of people that don't grow that way, man. And they're usually bitter.
Yeah.
They usually live life as a bitter person, you know.
I kind of think it's why early sobriety is so hard, too. Because mm-hmm. it's like all of your life lessons while you're in active addiction just stop or pause.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you get sober, it's like they all start coming at you. You're like, oh, man, like that was my fault.
Yeah.
And it's just like a flood of them coming in one after another.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's very true, too, because you get some guilt.
Yeah.
Especially whenever you burn some bridges,
mm-hmm.
you know, you've hurt people. You know, I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. I was very guilt motivated. You know, I wanted to like make things better because of my guilt of doing things so wrong.
Yeah.
You know, with my kids, I just wanted to be better with them because my biggest motivator was guilt.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's like, now it's more, I just want to do good because I want them to be better. And I know I still have an influence on their life. God has made it possible, you know, for me and my children and other people, my friends, you know, old friends and everything, to still have a relationship where I'm able to do good things instead of bad things, you know. But anyways, so things start going out a little bit out of control for you, right?
Yeah.
Now you're going through the excuses. So now, then what? When does it start really becoming unmanageable?
Well, so I'm pretty good at weaseling my way out of stuff.
No doubt.
There's a huge curse for me. So I get out of that liquor job and move into an even better liquor job.
Right.
I'm just like, I need to find an easier one or one that fits my skill sets more. Yeah, so I switch to what's called the supplier side. And so I start supplying and kind of supporting the distributor from the outside. So rather than having to do all that day-to-day stuff that I struggled with so much,
right,
I don't have to do that anymore.
Okay. So, and then are you liking that more? Are you
It was awesome. They give you a credit card. You got to go out and entertain people.
Yeah. So things are good professionally for you, right?
Yeah.
Does your consumption become more? Is it constantly progressing? Or, I mean, what's it like at that time?
Yeah, it was definitely progressing at that point, because now in my head I'm thinking, oh, it's my job to go drink.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's part of being a liquor supplier, is I got to go drink every night and show people.
You have to go, this is our liquor, have a shot, I'll have a shot.
Yeah, I'm going to show them how rock and roll I am.
Yeah. So now you're doing that. How long does that last?
I do that for probably 7 months in that specific role. Mm-hmm. And at this point, my high school sweetheart, she moves down to Atlanta. And so I tell that job, all right, I'm ready to leave Wisconsin. Take me or leave me.
Mm-hmm.
So they find a role for me down here in Georgia.
Oh, so they're nationwide.
Yeah.
Okay, they're a big distributor.
Yeah, so I essentially get what I considered kind of a promotion coming down here.
Mm-hmm. You got more money?
Yeah, more money, more responsibility.
Madison is not as big as...
Well, I was doing the whole state of Wisconsin.
Oh, wow.
For one specific brand.
Wow. So like, you're traveling a lot in Wisconsin then.
Yeah, all over the place.
All right, so then you moved down here.
Uh-huh.
And are you supplying the whole state of Georgia?
Yeah, and doing more brands, working more directly with our distributor, more money to expend on my expense account.
And your relationship with your girl is cool?
At the time, I thought it was cool. Mm-hmm. In hindsight, absolutely not.
Right.
Yeah.
She's unhappy.
She's unhappy. I'm unhappy. We're just not very good to each other.
Right. So are you confronted with your alcoholism during this whole time period?
No.
Not at all?
No, not really.
Right.
Occasionally, she might get upset if I drank too much one night or came home too late.
So you never even got confronted from her about like, hey,
no,
this is out of control.
It's more along the lines of like waking her up or something like that.
Right. So I guess it would be safe to say that you are a functioning alcoholic, right?
I thought so, yeah.
At least at that time, right?
Yep.
Because, you know, again, like I know a lot of people that, you know, are functioning alcoholics and drug addicts. You know, I know people that are able to live their lives professionally and still have that lifestyle. But inside of yourself, are your feelings are good about yourself during this time?
No, not at all.
So you're like not happy.
A lot of turmoil. Yeah.
A lot of turmoil. Now, where is that based? Where is that coming from?
Just this emptiness. Like, I didn't feel like I had any purpose. My ego and my brain thought I'd made it. Like, I had figured out how I could live the lifestyle I wanted.
Right.
Make money.
Right.
And be successful all at the same time.
But you still have a hole in you somewhere.
Giant hole. Yeah.
A giant hole of... So where is the despair? Where is the hurt? I mean, is it an unexplainable thing? You're just feeling... Are you feeling like you're just not doing what you want to do? Are you feeling like, even though you're successful? Because, you know, I mean, to be honest with you, a lot of people would say, you know, their purpose is to live a good life, mm-hmm. be successful at whatever career they find, have friends, have a partner, have those things going on. So what I'm wondering is where are you feeling empty? What aspect of your being is telling you this all sucks? Is it like just a depression in you?
Or? Yeah, well, I still had this like feeling of being removed from everyone else, including this partner who I was with for years.
Mm-hmm. When you say like there's a separation, meaning you can't really be you? Or you're not
lack
really
of connection. I didn't feel like anyone knew the real me.
Right.
It was all just this giant show I put on.
Everything's like a facade.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know. I'm familiar with that feeling too.
Yeah.
You know, it's often like you have to look at yourself and say, is this all an act?
Yep.
Am I being authentic? Am I being real? Am I being like me? Or am I just like putting on a show for all these people to like pat me on my back and like to find some sort of security in my acting self?
Yep.
And I'm not being me. I'm not being my core person. I'm not able to like express my feelings because it's all like it's not authentic, right?
Yeah.
Right. So now does that feeling start to overwhelm you at one time? Is that where like the drinking becomes heavier?
Definitely.
Because of your
does.
Unhappiness. Your unhappiness. Now are you like, so like is your state of mind like I'm just this no matter how good I get at this, I'm still everything still sucks? Is that like how it's going?
I thought
in
that
your
was
head?
Just life. I thought like I was just destined that everything would suck and that I just got to drink and party to like get through it.
Right. Okay. So I guess what I'm trying to segue into is, okay, now let's get to your bottom.
Yeah.
So what happens?
So surprisingly enough, I get down here to Atlanta and my drinking's progressing. So down here I discover some different substances
no
that allow me to do a little bit more drinking.
Okay.
Which I'd never even tried it before. Never been offered to me, but I mean, I really just wanted to use it just to drink longer.
Right.
You know, I'm blacking out. Suddenly you're out of the blackout and you keep going.
Longer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not something I ever did sober, but drinking every time it was like, yeah, let's do this. So, go through a breakup.
Now, what is it like growing apart type deal or is your lifestyle the issue in this breakup?
I think it was the underlying issue.
Even though she didn't really put it out there like this is the reason.
Yeah, I don't know if either one of us realized it, but my inability to connect. I didn't give a crap about anyone except myself.
Right.
I mean, my health at this point, like I think I was 270 pounds, something like that at this point. So
out of shape.
Yep.
Not feeling good at that. Your self-esteem was probably low.
Oh, even
though even though you're like killing it.
Yep.
In some aspects of your life, you're just not feeling good.
Yeah, so all the things that come with that.
Right.
So yeah, we go through this breakup and honestly I thought to myself, I'm like, cool, now I can live life the way I really want to live it.
So I guess that would be contributed to like sort of like a defense mechanism that you're putting up. Like, okay, you go.
Yep.
All right, now I'm doing me for real.
Yeah.
But you've been doing you for real this whole time.
Yep. I'm like, I can focus on my job now and get more successful in that, and I can stay out all night.
This is a new chapter.
Yeah.
A new chapter starts, right?
And it was a new chapter.
Yeah. But not necessarily a new chapter in the direction that you really wanted to go, right?
Not at all. It was a dangerous chapter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your lifestyle gets out of control.
Yep.
And you bottom out. Now, when I say, now usually when I talk about me bottoming out, it has to do with like everything's a wreck. I'm hating everything.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for me, like by God's grace, I'm in an institution where I can like do some sort of healing. Not my institution of choice, maybe, but it's a place where I'm able to get away from all that. Is that?
Yeah, I mean, it takes me a little while. I've got enough goodwill built up my job and career where I was able to function in my job for probably a year and a half in a really bad state because I had enough relationships and connections that I could keep pushing through it.
Because you're the man.
Yeah, I'm the man.
You're the man.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I just, you know, it's just, that's all, again, like I said, this is such an interesting story to me because you are really successful. I mean, you're moving into a, you are constantly promoted in your life during these times, at least from a professional point of view, you know, and that's really important. I mean, it's always going to be important. And it's not the most important thing of your life, of course. Mm-hmm. There's so many things that are more important, your relationship with God, your relationship with your significant other, your family, and all those things, yourself, your own personal health. Those things are way up there on the priority scale. However, like, your professional life is way up there, too. So, you know, it's like a, you know, when you see one side so good and then one side being so bad, you know, how do you really handle it? You know what I mean? How are you ever going to say goodbye to that aspect of your life? You know, so what happens to you?
Well, it was all a show. It wasn't all good.
Right. No, I get it.
I was able to put out those fires, and that's how I was still able to function.
That's how you shined in those
those
times, right?
It started to become very apparent to the people I worked for that something was very wrong.
Right.
Someone approached me about it.
Okay.
And
So it's like outwardly. Nice. So you're not even.
Yeah.
So right now, there's no hiding it. You're not concealing it that well.
Yeah.
Because when somebody's coming up to you and saying, "Hey, man,"
especially if you're in the liquor industry, and someone like suggests you got a liquor problem, like, dude, you should be like, "Hell yeah, I do."
Life's
like,
a little
no
chaotic.
No question. Yeah. Yep.
So you took the advice.
Sort of. I decided I was gonna take a couple of weeks off.
Okay. Just taking a break.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I identified as an alcoholic for probably 5 years prior to this.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
So you identify at it, but are you taking any steps to...
No, I just wanted to be a functional alcoholic the rest of my life.
Okay, so you know what's going on.
I wanted to be really good at it.
Right.
That's what I wanted to do.
Right, I get that.
So I take a couple weeks off, clean some stuff up with work. Do some of the sober things that people do, hang out with some sober people.
Right.
Not really buying into it, though. So I end up going back out drinking.
Okay. After you take a couple weeks off?
Yeah, after
you try to dry yourself out, in other words, right?
About 2 or 3 weeks. My mom has passed away around this time.
Oh, wow, man.
Which doesn't affect me at all right when it happens.
Uh-huh.
But it's... was after those 2 or 3 weeks of not drinking, all the grief, everything just hit me.
If you're not set up to handle, to be like, if there's no preparation, like if you're living in real, like especially your insides are all jacked up, and something else happens, and now you don't have like, you know, what's really your medicine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You don't have that escape.
Yeah.
And now you're just like looking at everything square in the face, man. That's a bad place to be.
Yeah, so the grief of my mom hit me in a really, I think, different way than people would understand it. Like, my mom had been paralyzed for probably 20 years.
Oh, wow.
She didn't have a lot of mental capacity left. So it was, in a way, it was time for her to pass and almost a relief when it happened.
Yeah.
But what really affected me was the amount of people at her funeral. There were hundreds of people there. And, like, my mom was just one of these genuinely amazing people.
Wow.
Like, just... the love you could feel at her funeral was amazing. What that did to me is it made me really depressed. I'm like, who am I? Like, people like me. They like the version of myself that I present.
Right.
But I'm like, I don't deserve any sort of love like that.
Wow, that's revealing. That's revealing, man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know, it is a bad time, but you're like, you're looking back at a big crowd of people all like mourning from a sincere, loving place because your mom is such a great person. So I know it brings you to depression, but I guess the depression is because you're not like your mom, right? So what happens next?
So I take those couple weeks off. It seems like stuff's getting cleaned up. You know, I know at work it's... I have a new boss, and he's like, things are going really good. Like, he's like, I see this honest change in you. And I'm
automatically. They're like, oh, man, you clean up good after you.
I do. I remember he was in town, and he's like, you know, I'd kind of had a breakdown before that. And he's like, you look really good. Yeah, I'm like, thanks. I got my life back together in 2 weeks. So, yeah, then, you know, I deserve a couple more drinks again, right?
Right, so you're feeling confident, too. You're taking that, like, you're right. I feel great. I am doing good, yeah.
So, I think, like, two or three, it wasn't very long into drinking again, maybe as a week or two, and I'm just, like, escalated back
a
up.
A mess.
Yeah, like, pass out in a parking lot, get robbed.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, just all kinds of, so I go on, like, a 10, at this point, I'm like, all right, I already knew I was an alcoholic. But I'm like, maybe I'm not a functional alcoholic. And that's what really beat me up. I'm like, this isn't functioning.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
what happens? Do you go seek help? You go to treatment? What happens next?
Like 10 days of just this manic mania. A lot of people are really worried about me. My company, as upset as they were at me,
right.
I think they were more worried about me.
Oh, I'm sure that you... got some great respect because of your work. Seriously, probably because you're worthy. Because you're not, people just don't, you know, there's a lot of hard work into striving and becoming successful. For most people, it just doesn't happen like clockwork, man.
Yeah.
There's a lot. Dedication, a lot of obligation.
Yeah.
Being there, doing hard work, and like being able to do better. So you probably earned the respect from your peers in your professional life, right?
It was out, but it was... There's no more respect to be had.
That's it. But they were still concerned for you. Like
they were very concerned. I think it was hazy. I was drinking nonstop in these 10 days. I'd never done a bender like that before that was just all the way through consistent. And I remember having a conversation with my CEO. And he's just like, what do I do with you? I'm worried about you. And
right.
I'd been searching like rehabs and stuff like that at that point.
Oh, okay, good. So you're looking for help.
And I told him, I'm like, I'm scared. Like, I want to be able to go to rehab.
Right.
Like, that's what I want right now. And in hindsight, once again, I'm looking at it, was I trying to be manipulative and do one last save of my job?
Mm-hmm.
Which
probably has something to
do. I'm sure it was something, looking something, back on it. Yeah.
Something was in there.
Yeah,
I think it's two things like they're happening simultaneously.
Yep.
I want to do. Let me get back to my job and get right. But at the same time, there's another party going. You know, man. I got robbed outside.
Yeah.
I need some help. Man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
And you get the help.
So, I stopped drinking cold turkey.
Okay.
Go through withdrawal for the first time.
Right.
End up in the ICU for 3 nights.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, my withdrawal was pretty serious.
Wow, that's a physical addiction.
I don't remember a lot of it, but if they're putting you in the ICU, it's...
That's a real deal.
Yeah.
That's heavy, man.
So, get out of that, go to a treatment facility.
Okay.
About 2 weeks into it, I just, like, burst into tears. I was like...
Emotional overload.
Yeah, I was talking to my counselor, and I'm like, I can't actually drink again. Or I can, but I'm like, I'm going to end up right back where I was, if not worse.
Right.
And at that point, too, I was like, it's probably not a smart idea for me to go back to my job. I don't know if they were going to have me back anyways. They probably weren't. But it's not important. But
right.
Yeah, that was tough for me. I was...
Wow.
Yeah.
So you go through rehab, then you got... So when do the steps and a sponsor and all these, like, how does that start working?
So,
because we're kind of running short on time a little bit. So.
Okay, so we'll try and speed it up. Yeah. But man, at this point, like the whole step thing, I still didn't think that was for me,
mm-hmm.
and that's why I was going to rehab. Was like, all right, I need some science based stuff.
Yeah.
And what do they start talking about with steps?
Right.
I got real lucky, so I went to a couple places, and I found some people that I connected with just like that. And
your higher power is already working.
Yeah, man. You know the group of people I'm around.
Yeah.
They're some of the best people.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And I was able to hear the message they had.
Right.
And it fit with what I could comprehend at that point.
Right.
So I start doing that right away.
Right. So, not that I want to push anything, but we are running a little bit short. So what happens is that you actually get yourself into what I consider to be such a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get into your sobriety group of people. the people that you're going through recovery actually become a network that is giving you work and giving you, you know, putting things in front of you where you're now progressing in life in sobriety for how many months now?
In sobriety?
Yeah.
It's a year and a half.
A year and a half right now.
Yeah.
And the reason I wanted to point to talk about this a little bit is because going into recovery, okay, and you can tell me this from your experience, right? What you find, and like there is uniqueness to your, there is a lot of blessings and uniqueness in your story as mm-hmm. far as your sobriety is concerned and going into recovery and how this all turns out. But I think in general, when you go, when you enter the rooms, when you go to meetings and you start networking out, you start finding people that sincerely care,
yep.
that are really from their heart are going to help you. You know, what aspect of your life, you know, each one does, I don't know. But mm-hmm. it's going to be, you know, when you go to the rooms more and you start sharing, you start hearing stories, you start opening up a little bit, you're going to see, like, it's a spiritual revelation that happens to you because now, you know, you put this part of your life into your higher power's hands mm-hmm. and things just start happening.
Yeah, I could have never imagined that I would, one, feel and think the way I think now.
Right.
But that the people that want to be around me, want to work around me, want to hang out with me.
Yeah.
I just could have never imagined that those people would want to do that with me.
So that's awesome, man. So let's talk about present day Grant. What's going on with you today? What are you doing today? How are you dealing with your recovery? What's happening with you professionally? What is your personal life like? You know, what is your day by day?
So my day to my day, it's entirely different. It's I start my day with prayer and meditation every morning.
Wow.
That changes everything.
How awesome is that? Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, because that's a discipline in itself to be able to get
there. Prayer was a four-letter word for me.
Wow, man.
A year and a half ago.
Wow, man.
So, I mean, I got prayers on the background of my phone.
Right. So you're constantly connecting with your higher power.
Yep.
And meditation is a big thing for you, right?
It's huge, yeah.
Yeah. And you got a network of love around you.
Yep.
And now you are kind of in the same profession right now, right? Kind of.
Sort of,
totally
yeah.
different thing, but
it's the same skill sets.
Same skill sets.
I mean, I'm back doing some sort of weird form of sales where we're getting restaurant concepts out there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you know, it requires me to be problem solver, personable, manage inventories, finances. So all the things I was doing before, I'm back doing again.
You're feeling good, man.
Yeah.
Right, you're feeling great, right?
It's great.
And I just, and from beginning to know you and getting to know you, I think that, you know, you're somebody that I see that I know is like working a program that are like taking your sobriety serious. I mean, every time we interact, every time we talk, and now it's been almost daily, mm-hmm. you know, for some weeks now that it is the priority in your life, regardless of what's going on around you. So it's almost like I think a reverse for you is this: your professional life is way up here, but mm-hmm. your personal life is like way down here, your insides. Mm-hmm. Now that part of you is like way up here.
Yep.
You know, and in running everything, which is such a change. I mean, that's a monumental change for a person to go through. You know, any kind of change for a person to go through is hardcore, but that kind of change is amazing to me. It's like a miracle to me.
Well, there's really nothing material-wise I think I can achieve
right.
that matches what I've achieved with my sobriety.
Absolutely. Absolutely, man.
Addicts and alcoholics, they're not supposed to get sober.
No doubt.
You know, it's a blessing.
It is a total blessing because the stats are staggering on how, you know, people are the ability for somebody to maintain sobriety and to, like, live a good life and follow the steps and do those things. But, man, I just love your story, dude. I love this time that we spent together where we can get to know a little bit more. I'm sure we're going to be talking more all the time. And I just want to thank you, man. Thank you for like being vulnerable enough to come here, talk about your stuff, talk about what you've been through, and allowing the audience and everybody here to get to know you a little bit better, man. Your story is a story of success, from coming a spiritual success, a personal success. And in my opinion, that's what really matters, man. And when I see you, I totally see. Once when you come in and you enter a room, I just let everybody know, man, Grant is a love dude, okay? Like, there's an interconnection, like, that of people that I've met here while being on the Most High Show. And there's one thing for sure, that Grant is a love dude by everybody that knows him. And I couldn't be more happier for how you're living your life right now. And, you know, I just love it, man. And thank you so much, man, for being a part of this, dude.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
I appreciate you,
Thanks
brother.
For having
thank
me
you
on.
So much.